Welcome to InfoNation, University of Illinois at Chicago's very own podcast created by students for the students. At InfoNation, we discover how media, information, and communication are created, governed, and used. Produced by upper-level communication students in the Department of Communication, InfoNation brings academic research to help make sense of our increasingly mediated society. We go to the library so you won't have to.
Sharing economy?
No.
What do you know about the sharing economy?
Shit.
Have you ever heard of the sharing economy?
Yes.
What do you know? What do you think about it?
It is a good idea in theory.
The sharing economy is like when when you like share things with the people. Is that what the sharing economy is?
What do you know about the sharing economy?
The what?
The sharing economy.
I don't know nothing here.
The sharing economy. Ever heard about it? Let's talk about it.
So Uber, Airbnb, Lyft, TaskRabbit, all these companies were born and exist only within the sharing economy. Most of us use them daily, glad to escape the days of having to hail expensive cabs or rent overpriced hotel rooms.
But what are these companies really? More than just an app, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, industries participating in this thing called the sharing economy are advocating a different approach to consumerism, basically that the access to resources is more important than the ownership of resources.
Sounds like a fancy way of saying sharing is caring.
I guess so.
So when did this become a thing, though? I mean, I learned it in kindergarten, and I use Uber all the time, but it seemed to just spring up like a magical angel releasing us from the hell that is having to hail a cab.
Well, the sharing economy's ideology isn't necessarily a recent concept. People have been sharing resources a long time before Uber and Airbnb allowed us to do so in a large format. What you're seeing is more a surge in accessibility. Radical technological changes in the growth of Web 2.0 allowed us to have more accessible technology. Then more people got connected. Once we got connected, opportunities for collaboration increased. And with collaboration comes sharing, so bam, mass amounts of people were able to share mass amounts of resources.
So basically, these businesses exist on a digital platform and function primarily through users' distribution of resource contributions?
You've got it. So you register for Uber as a driver, and you share your car with a consumer in need. Register for Uber as a consumer, and you share your money with a driver in need. All Uber does is facilitate these transactions.
How many companies are there like that, though? I mean, you named a few, but certainly not enough to validate being called a whole economy.
Actually, it's quite the booming business. In 2013, Forbes estimated that the revenue flowing through the sharing economy and into people's pockets would exceed $3.5 billion, holding a total value of $26 billion. Going past that current revenue, investors regard the sharing economy as a new megatrend, with researchers citing predicted profits will double within the next 12 months. That means this economy can potentially grow to over $110 billion in profit revenue in the coming years.
But let's stop. And let's get a little more specific than just the whole sharing economy in general. Let's talk about what we know. In our experience, ride sharing is one of the most popular industries within this untraditional economy. So, we went out and talked to a few people about their personal motivations behind using companies like Uber and Sidecar, and we found out what they had to say.
I use Uber the same way I advocate the CTA, because it promotes environmental stability. It's car sharing. I mean, it helps out the environment just a little bit.
So there's the sustainability factor.
What do you mean sustainability factor?
Well, if we're still looking at the ride sharing industry with companies like Uber and Sidecar, the environment is benefiting quite a bit from these companies. A big majority of users split rides, making the service double up as a carpooling agent.
The University of California recently reported carpoolers can lower CO2 and hydrocarbons by up to 220,000 tons each year.
Oh, geez. And with the Union of Concerned Scientists recently reporting that our personal vehicles are a major cause of global warming, cars and trucks account for nearly one-fifth of all emissions in the U.S., emitting around 24 pounds of carbon dioxide and other global warming gases for every gallon of gas. The service is starting to sound pretty beneficial to Mother Earth.
I mean, us millennials especially love the green aspect of companies like Uber. Researchers at University of Indiana recently reported our generation is emerging as core supporters of green products and services, and I guess the sharing economy is helping us to go green.
Yeah. But I recently read in the Journal of Information Science and Technology that sustainability might only be an important factor for those whom ecological consumption was already important to. I mean, I'm no poster child for the recycling company, and I certainly don't think about all the gas that's being saved by my excessive Uber habit.
True. The University of Zurich recently reported how the crowding out phenomenon might be at play within the sharing economy, advocating extrinsic motivations start overshadowing the initial intrinsic motivations.
Speak English. Like, what do you mean by these intrinsic, extrinsic motivations?
Well, when researchers have studied motivations behind specific behaviors, they found that behavior is influenced by two dimensions, intrinsic and extrinsic motivations. Intrinsic, basically meaning natural and essential, and extrinsic meaning the opposite, unnatural or unessential.
Okay, I'm listening.
An intrinsic motivation would be like what we just talked about, performing the action or behavior because you enjoy the activity itself, like taking Uber to save gas, or as some believe.
I like Uber because it provides me such a great experience and you get to meet great people and provides a new opportunity.
So, as you just heard, apparently people like the enjoyment or social gain. I mean, so, like, the interactionalist aspect of businesses like Uber. You get to meet strangers and have random conversations.
That journal I mentioned earlier did find the enjoyment of participation is the strongest determinant of participation. This enjoyment is experienced simply because the process is fun and provides a meaningful way to interact with other members of the community. Researchers and robots also call these benefits social capital, which differs from other forms of capital, which are based on assets or individuals. Social capital exists in relationships between individuals and in individuals' connections with their communities.
How about we just refer to that as emotional money from now on?
Okay.
In my experience, cab drivers offer little to no emotional money. Most have an angry disposition, and if you try to use a credit card to pay them, oh my god. Speaking of money, I'm assuming behavior influenced by physical assets would then be named extrinsic motivation?
Yep. And within the sharing economy, researchers relate this concept to the industry's convenience factor and also the economic gain that is received in the sharing economy's transactions.
We talking about saving me money?
Yep, here's what some of the people we interviewed said about ride-sharing economic benefits.
So what do you think about the sharing economy?
It's a lot more affordable as opposed to either a taxi or a regular hotel room.
Uber's real cheap and I really like Uber.
You know, it's interesting, after hearing everything that everyone had to say about economic motivations, I read something by Eckhart that said consumers in the sharing economy are more interested in cost effectiveness and convenience more than they are in forming relationships with a company or other consumers.
That's true. I'm usually too drunk to talk when I'm Ubering. I just want to save that money so I can blow it on a burrito instead. Chipotle is my life.
Yeah, but even if it's working for the wrong reasons, I guess it's still working, right? These companies offer deals and specials that are difficult to pass up, encouraging people to try and continue using their services.
Difficult to pass up indeed. Business Insider did a study comparing Uber and taxi rates in 30 major U.S. cities. Want to know how much each ride-sharing is really saving? A bunch. Research showed that a taxi is often 2 times the cost of an Uber. So if you took a taxi and the ride cost you $20, then the Uber would most likely cost you $10.
That's interesting. I also read that Chicago is the lowest costing rideshare city in America, too. So hey us, Chicago, cheapest Uber city in America. But besides that, Uber's rates include a tip. So I'm sure the price difference is even larger.
That tip policy is also just so much easier. I don't want to have to deal with judging someone's behavior and using that judgment to reward them with an undisclosed amount of money. And it's always really abstract. Like, if they open my door or if they help me get my luggage from the trunk, then I'm expected to pay an extra tip. Or anything else that happens, I'm expected to pay. It's really confusing sometimes.
Plus, because it's through an app or a digital platform, most money transactions are easily recorded, so you can see where your money is going. In general, ride-sharing's convenience factor is simply, like, out of control. Technology allowed this easily installable app to deliver a car anywhere you happen to be. It's not even just, like, limited to Uber. It, like, the same applies to Airbnb. like, crowdfunding, everything.
True. I mean, when you're on vacation, Uber's there. When you get lost, Uber's there. When you get drunk and you can't ride a cab, Uber's there. Basically, anywhere your phone is, Uber is there.
Not just Uber, like, all of these sharing economy industries, they're wherever you want to be, and that's amazing. And I think that's a huge part of why people are doing this. And, like, just going back specifically to Uber, their company specifically advertises that 56 countries are now providing their services.
Oh my god, that's crazy. 56 countries of convenienceness and awesome.
And if the first encounter goes well between a consumer and their, like, first experience within the sharing economy, they're more likely to try their services and continue using that same service. So really, the extrinsic and intrinsic motivations go hand in hand. Speaking of psychology jargon, we knew that there had to be more psychological motivations behind this. The growth we talked about earlier didn't happen overnight, but it did happen for a reason. And we wanted to have a more holistic reasoning and a better grasp and understand why it's happening. Well, we talked to an expert on psychology to get a more academic grasp of consumers' motivation behind participating within the sharing economy. Here's what Paula Pohlheimer had to say about possible psychological influences and factors that are propelling the growth of the sharing economy.
All right. So the first question is, what is your name and educational background?
My name is Paula Pohlheimer, and my educational degree, I got a Bachelor's of Arts in Theater Art with an emphasis on costume design. And then in 1996, I went back to school and got a master's in marital and family therapy at the Family Institute at Northwestern University. And I obtained that degree in 1998.
Perfect. So I know Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky have done a lot of research about the influence and rationale of decision making. Can you explain to us a few of them?
They took some former theories that were able to predict how people make decisions using mathematical equations. But what these mathematical equations didn't take into consideration was that that people's minds work differently, and people are influenced by the way the brain works. And so I was thinking about, a lot of my work is about the effect of anxiety on cognition. So what they're really saying is that these are certain concepts. There's certain concepts like availability, representativeness, loss aversion, and framing that are all the way, they're all mechanisms in the brain that change the way you interpret information or data. So I think what's interesting is that, you know, when you're talking about making a decision when there's uncertainty and risk, you're going to be anxious. You're going to be influenced by the way information is presented to you. And information can be presented as two sides of the same coin, positive, negative. You stand to gain, you stand to lose, which you're going to choose. Framing, availability, what's the most recent information that you have, the thing you most remember. Most of us will think about, you know, what did we just hear about this thing? Like, what did I just hear about an Uber driver? Or what did I just, a friend just tell me about using Uber? So I think that they identified that people make decisions not just based on probability, but also based on the way the emotional structure of the brain affects how they think.
Very good.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Perfect. So then when speaking of the dynamic and influence of choice, what do you think is propelling the sharing economy's success?
I was identifying that all three of them do.
Availability, so example, representativeness, framing, yeah.
Yeah, all three. Mm-hmm. So people see potential gains, and then they see their opportunity to minimize loss. The losses would be money. So they see that, okay, they could save money if they do an Airbnb or if they use Uber. They see some intangible gains, like we're supporting an economy that isn't about putting money in corporate pockets or municipality pockets, you know, that fees that cab drivers charge are mostly related to their licensing fees that they have to pay to the city in order to be able to run a cab. Fortunately, that's not anything that goes in their pocket, but I think consumers now are thinking about the end game, who's going to ultimately get this money. So they see that as an intangible gain for not just themselves, but for society. I also think that people like the idea of getting something a little closer to what they actually need rather than just, here's what we're presenting. We're presenting a big building with hotel rooms and they're all the same. Mm-hmm. You know, they start to think about, well, I don't need a pool, but I would like a kitchen, or I would like several bedrooms, or really I just need to sleep on someone's couch, or, you know, like, what do I need for this trip? So that can be kind of empowering. I think information technology presents the framing through which they see it as, you know, a little familiar and more safer, because think about, like, Uber drivers, people, young people use information technology. Mm-hmm. And so you think of Uber drivers carrying around a smartphone with an app, and you're more likely to think about, that relates to that representativeness, that sort of like, this person is like me. I'm young, I've got my smartphone here, all I have to do is hit an app, get, you know, someone else who's young, who has their smartphone with them, so it feels a little safer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people are connecting on the same kind of format. The way they see the risk involved is lower because everyone's sort of checked out. There still is this entity out there that evaluating, are you, you know, do you get good reviews? Are you worthy of being an Uber driver? Are you worthy of being listed on Airbnb or a Lyft driver, or those kinds of things?
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So then when speaking of the dynamic and influence of choice, what do you think is derailing participation within competing industries? So like cabs and hotels that are currently in our traditional economy.
The traditional economy, so you're saying, what is derailing the traditional economy from participating the way the sharing economy is? Is that what your question
yes.
is?
Yes. So, like, what do you think is otherwise causing people to move from to these kinds of society, these kinds of economies, rather than the traditional economy?
Okay. I think there's still going to be a market for people that want everything to be the same and very predictable. Mm-hmm. For instance, the business traveler. Mm-hmm. You know, and major corporations that are getting hotel rooms for business travelers are going to want the sameness, the homogeneity, the predictability.
Okay.
Okay, we'll pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pay extra for that. I think cabs, unfortunately, aren't positioned well to handle the competition from places like Uber and Lyft. They're kind of stuck because they don't have they're pretty restricted. They don't have the freedom to just maybe get a call directly from somebody,
mm-hmm.
go out in the neighborhood. They have to stick to certain neighborhoods. Like they have to stick to downtown or they have to stick to the airport because they're really not going to make any money if they vary that pretty rigid route mm-hmm. too much. I think for them, it's a lot of it is just the licensing fees. I think, they're so heavily regulated. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah. Yep. So then are you a consumer in the sharing economy? Like why or why not do you use these?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I've really given it serious consideration. Mm-hmm. One, I have a pretty decent guest suite in my home, and I have thought about listing it on Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't made the move just because I'm not quite sure I want to take on the work that would be involved. So from being a provider in the sharing economy, that's kind of where I'm at. I do like the idea of resources that are idle being put into use in the community in general.
Mm-hmm.
I looked into Airbnb for my own personal travel, and it didn't work out. I think I would have been fine with it, but it didn't work out for my travel companions.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up staying in hotels, and I haven't really needed any kind of car transportation or anything like that. I'm pretty well situated there. So I haven't really, I think it's exciting, and I think it's really nice to see consumers empowering themselves, sort of deciding, oh, we don't have to go through big name companies. We can do this ourselves and start it up. Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Well, that's it. So thank you for being here today.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Sorry.
For, yeah.
And good luck to you and Ashley.
Oh, thank you so much.
So listeners, we're interested in your opinion. Are you a consumer in this budding economy? What is your opinion of its provided benefits? Tweet us your answer or any questions at SharingIsCaringUIC.
Until next time, listeners, keep calm and learn on.
Thanks for listening to InfoNation, coming to you from the University of Illinois at Chicago's Department of Communication. Our theme music was created by Sean Rizvi, a 2015 graduate. We hope to pique your interest and you learned something new today. Feel free to engage by rating, commenting, or sharing our episodes.